Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is Belinda Mello, who's an Alexander Technique teacher who lives in New York City. She's been teaching for over 20 years. She has a lot of experience in performing arts, theater, dance. She's worked with musicians. And in her own background, she has an MFA in directing, and I would say just generally working with performance people in the performing areas is something that she does quite a bit of, and I'm sure she also has plenty of students who do other things. Would that be fair, Belinda?
I think that's very, very fair.
Wide range of students. And we're going to talk today about a teacher that we both studied with, a woman named Marjorie Barstow. And she lived in Lincoln, Nebraska from roughly 1900 to 1985 or 6, I forget which. And we both spent a fair amount of time on workshops that she gave. We also, of course, also worked with a lot of other teachers. And we're going to talk about what was unique about Marge and what we've taken from her work into our own. Belinda, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm really pleased to be asked.
Well, Marjorie was a huge influence on quite a few people, and I think it might be nice to start a little bit with how you first encountered her and what your first experience with her work was.
Oh, yes. Well, I would say that in many ways, her teaching was the defining way that I understood Alexander Technique from the beginning of my experience, because my first experience was studying with Bruce Fertman when I was in college. And so that I had a sense that I could learn in groups from the beginning. I did have private lessons with some other people, but when I met Marjorie was when I was looking at training programs, and she was a guest at Bruce and Martha's program in Philadelphia.
And we should say here that Bruce and Martha are both Alexander teachers who essentially trained with Marge Barstow.
Yes, that's right. I think they had other teachers, but I think that they grounded their teaching in her work.
Right.
And I mean, she sold me. we had a large gathering of people, and it was so clear there was a buzz around this woman, and in walks this older lady with the no nonsense, completely no self-doubt, unapologetic attitude that was so humorous but so precise and absolutely no, like I said, no nonsense. I was both inspired and intimidated by her immediately, because I was a person in my 20s, and I was very distracted with my own internal world and my own internal self-doubt and my own internal need to be perfecting myself. And she was not welcoming that mindset in the room for a minute. I felt immediately I was being asked to pay attention to the here and now and not to waste my energy on unneeded attitude or thinking. And she was also creating an atmosphere of a lot of fun.
Yes.
A lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was dancing a lot at that time, and I think we took turns. People took turns doing things. And I got up and was doing some kind of contact improvisation kind of thing. And she watched us for a while, and she said, "Well, I suppose if you want to dance all floppy like that, you
could." Right. Yeah. I can picture that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's a nice floppy dance you're doing. But also she was sort of like, I think she sort of said something like, "Well, so what is your question?" She didn't say it that way, but that's what she didn't say those words. But she sort of made me put my feet on the floor and really think. And what was my question?
Mm-hmm. What were you there for?
What was I there for?
Yeah, and it's interesting because Marge had a much earlier background in dance herself. She mm-hmm. actually ran a dance studio here in Lincoln back in the early 20s for a while. So she was pretty familiar with dance.
Yes, and I love those old pictures of her in this very Isadora Duncan-esque
whole thing.
But there's an attention to line and attitude and focus that I don't think I was demonstrating at the time.
Right. She was certainly the most in-the-moment person that I've ever encountered. She really had very, very little interest in the past. She didn't repress it or anything, but she just wasn't all that interested in it, and she wasn't that concerned about the future either. She really wanted you, the student, to be present in the present, which she didn't put it this way, but really that's the only place you can make a change is right now.
Yeah, and you know, I teach a lot of people in their late teens, early 20s, because I teach at a BFA program in Brooklyn College. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Marge has been such an incredible influence to me because I can still remember what it meant to be around a person who seriously wanted to engage my brain and my presence and did not invite me to go off in my kind of 20-year-old reverie about questioning the meaning of life.
Right.
And it actually was a very, very big help. It wasn't, as you said, repressive.
No.
It was inspiring. It was kind at a time in our lives when we need somebody to be clear and kind and set an example. And I mean it's very moving to me. She really, I don't often think about her as much as I should, but when you asked me to do this, I went back and started looking at some of the videos of her at that period of time, which was sort of the 80s, from like about 85 to 88.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's with me all the time.
Yeah, I would say the same thing about that. I'd echo that last thought of yours that I was in the middle of a training course, an Alexander training course in England when I first met Marge. I was about halfway through, and I flew from London over to England for a winter workshop that she gave in 79, 80, I forget which. And I was just totally blown away by the experience. I'd never had anything remotely like that in the Alexander related before. My initial interest in her was I heard she did group work.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, in England at that time, group work had a very dicey reputation. There were a lot of people who felt that it was a perversion of the technique. And there were some very nasty meetings, stat-sponsored meetings at that time. And I just thought, well, I'm kind of curious what she does. How is she going to do that, and how is she going to do it effectively? And, of course, as anyone who studied with her knows, she was extremely good at working with often very large groups of people. But I think the points that you made at the beginning about her being in the present and being very clear about that, in a way, was almost more important than the group part of it. I mean, they were related, but I would say the really huge change that she brought about was, at least for me, was just absolute clarity about what am I doing right now? And what is my intention right now? And being better able to stay with that program, I'm sure, than I would if I had never met Marge.
So. And And I
and to teach that to people,
right.
Because no, and I'm sure any Alexander teacher listening, their student listening to this will know that that is one of the big challenges when you're first working with someone, to keep them, have them remain present and gently focused on what it is you want them to experiment with.
Yes, and I find that in my workday with my different students, particularly actually people who have experienced a lot of pain, there's an incredible amount of discouragement that they bring in with in the room with them.
Mm-hmm.
There's and this discouragement is something that I think I understand how to meet in a more effective way because of her. And I don't know that I realized it when I was younger, what I was seeing exactly, but now I understand how very precise she was with her attitude and her language.
Mm-hmm.
And really spoke to the students' exact thinking. So that sometimes she might say to a student, you're going to move your head up. And because that student needed to take responsibility for their own experience and use. And at another time, she might say to someone something that was much more subtle, because that person was more of an end gainer. And if she had said the word move, that person was clearly pushing themselves. And that kind of ability to listen to the individual, to see what the individual needed, allows me to see what people need to go through step by step in their process of learning about their use and freeing themselves sometimes from a cycle of pain.
Mm-hmm. And people in pain also, apart from the preoccupation with the pain itself, often have developed some very strong preconceived ideas about what their situation is that may be pretty inaccurate. And again, Marge would be very good at helping to reframe that in people's minds.
Yes. And, mm-hmm. And she would, and the thing was about it, she could do this in a group and she could do it with the individual she was working with. And so that sitting in a group, I was learning a tremendous amount. And I can remember a very specific time with that where she was working on people and there was some question about inhibition that came up. And she really paused, and instead of sort of jumping into some quick answer, she said, you know, that's what I'm teaching all the time.
Yeah, I was there
It was kind of amazing, right?
And
then she did this thing where she often would have people in the room who were from the city of Nebraska that were not Alexander teachers or necessarily sitting in the same room with people who were student Alexander teachers, professional Alexander teachers, performers, all kinds of people. And she would have us work on something very simple like walking. And sometimes she would have us get up and all walk and then one by one walk by her and get a little quickie, a little direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember that I was able to put together that question and answer, those examples I was watching that day, and the experience of her hands in that quick little moment I had with her, where it was so clear that there was no alternative for me that but to free my neck and move up. That's our language for that. But there was no question that her hands, if I were to pull down my head with her hands on my head, I was going to meet up like meeting a brick wall.
right.
It's like, nope, it's not that direction.
Right. No, her hands were just spectacularly precise and powerful and very light at the same time.
Exactly.
So she was able to kind of do, as she would put it, do your thinking for you with her hands to help give you an experience that she, of course, always wanted, if possible, for you to get on your own. But she was very adaptable. I mean, if she had someone who, from your example, say someone in a lot of pain, who clearly was not going to be doing a lot of constructive thinking right away, she would work with that. She would just help them and then maybe try to sneak in a little idea of how they might work on their own. But she wasn't going to insist on it with someone who clearly was not able to do that.
That's right.
You know, she's very adaptable. And the other skill that she had that it just to this day still amazes me is how she would be able to work with an individual in a group setting in such a way that the whole group would benefit from it. She was always aware of the group. She would be helping an individual, but she knew that anything she said was going out there to 50 or 60 or 70 pairs of ears, and that she had to be careful of her choice of language, and she just pulled that off brilliantly time after time.
Yeah, she was really speaking to our thinking. She was speaking to the thinking that was going on in the room, mm-hmm. and speaking of the individual that she, and the thinking of the individual that she was working with, and really bit by bit working through where the beliefs were that were getting in that person's way mm-hmm. from having constructive thinking, and bit by bit leading them to the their own ability to have more constructive thinking in that moment. And that is just one of those amazing things that I was able to experience so early on that mm-hmm. that has remained a kind of a cornerstone, or I think a question in my mind when I'm teaching. Okay, am I able to communicate with this person's thinking so that they can think constructively for themselves? You know, and it's amazing what beliefs you pull up.
Right, right, exactly.
You know, my father is always my favorite example, where it's not always easy to give your parents an Alexander lesson.
No, it's not.
Yeah. Once I said, so, you know, I was working with them, it wasn't easy. And I said, so, in kind of a more of a Marge way, not like trying to make my hands more effective, but trying to find out what was the belief that was making it hard for him to free his neck. Mm-hmm. I said, so, Dad, if you've freed your neck a little bit more, what do you think would happen with your head? And he said, oh, my head would fall off. And he said it jokingly, but it was sort of the image that he had in his head, that if his neck was a little more free, it was going to drop off.
Right. And so you could use that information to.
Absolutely.
To yeah.
Well, if
yeah.
that was true, of course you wouldn't free your neck.
Right. Right. Absolutely not.
So, you know, and I guess that's the other thing, is that this idea that people's habits or their normal way of organizing themselves, it's not out of their stupidity. It's out of just a misunderstanding, because it's very consistent with what they're understanding.
Well, and I don't know, I suppose Marge wouldn't have used this phrase, but we all talk about movement and posture habits, but it's really comes down to habits of thinking.
Yes.
Habits of how we imagine we are organized, and how we, quote, should, unquote, organize ourselves or whatever. And a lot of those habits of thinking bear some looking into, because they may not always be helpful. And I think Marge was the master, really, of working with how her people she worked with thought about themselves, directed themselves.
Yes, and how it was truly manifested physically. Mm-hmm. And you could so see that connection in her classes.
Yes, I mean, anyone in the group could, if you spent any time with her, you'd start to see exactly what she was talking about. And she would even say to people on the first day of a class, she would say, you know, one of the things I want to train is your ability to observe. Mm-hmm. And you know, the thing you mentioned earlier, in her classes, typically, there would be a total mix of people. And you, there would be in Lincoln anyway, people would just drop in, you know, friend of a friend. I hear there's this great lady, and suddenly there'd be some student from UNL or just someone's father, you know, or mother.
Yes.
I mean, it was just, and if you were just to walk into the room and look at the group of people there, you'd be very hard pressed to tell who was an experienced Alexander teacher and who was just had never encountered the technique before.
Yeah.
And she certainly didn't treat people any differently. I guess the one way you could maybe get an idea who was a teacher was when she would ask if anyone wanted to do anything, and teachers often had no idea what they might do, except possibly, and this was a very iffy thing, say to Marge, well, I'd like to work with teaching. And, of course, as any of us who hung out with Marge know, that was, you were really going to be in for it then, because she was very, very strict about that. I mean, she wouldn't let you get away with anything. If you wanted to actually put hands on someone or teach them, she would be on your case right from the first you walking over to the person.
Oh, yeah, that, you know? That was the lesson I had with her on teaching, was like, wait a minute. You're going to walk, you're walking over to this person without thinking. Go
exactly,
back.
Exactly.
Over there, just look at them.
Yeah.
Change your perspective.
Right.
And, but she also, it was also interesting how she could be kind and see where at that point in my life I was pretty self-conscious, mm-hmm. And could be easily embarrassed. And she didn't embarrass me. That was the other thing about it. It was really, truly was a lesson.
She was pretty sensitive to that. She certainly
was strict, but
but she was sensitive. Absolutely.
Yeah, I do want to say that. And then she was a little sharp in some ways that were funny. So people that would get somebody laughing at themselves. Mm-hmm. She had that tendency to like poke people in the back of the knees when they were walking, when they were very
mm-hmm.
stiffly.
Mm-hmm. Right,
and like trying to hold on to the feeling in their head, she would like poke them in the back of the knees, get those knees moving.
Right, right.
Boing, boing, you know, and they would laugh and we would laugh
and they would learn something from
that.
Actually, I'd like to come back to that and to your earlier comment on how she would say to someone, well, you just got to move your head. But she would be careful to whom she said that and how she said it. And I have to say, when I first encountered Marge, as I say, I'd been halfway through a training course, and I would hear her say that, well, just move your head delicately up or something like that, or, you know. And it took me several days of processing that and questioning her, because that went against everything I was learning in England about directing. I mean, the one thing you did not want to do is move anything. You know, you wanted to just get it all through just directing. And she's the one, what I really got from that is, if you are directing, there is going to be a movement. There's no way around that. And I think that Marge kind of took it a little more from the other direction. She said, well, yeah, you got to move your head, but we're going to pay a lot of attention to how you do it.
Yeah, and I think her language just was very practical.
Very practical.
And could speak to the people who were the friend of the woman that liked her class and came in that day. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a lot of jargon. And as you said, if you're freeing and directing, then your head is moving.
Right.
So who's moving it? Is there a string coming from the ceiling moving your head? No.
Right.
Is it Marge moving your head?
She was not big on that image at all.
No, exactly. Let's not make this mysterious.
Yeah.
You know, it's moving and it's happening in you. It's mm-hmm. you that's moving. So move your head. That's how I took it, or came to understand it. Not you should force your head to move.
But you can see how for certain teachers, particularly certain training traditions, and that would almost seem heretical. And that some people would say, well, you know, she's not really teaching the Alexander technique. She's doing something else that may be very good, but it's not the Alexander technique. Whereas I would argue that she was totally working to principle. She certainly developed, if you like, procedures for teaching that were not ones that I would imagine Alexander used, because I don't think, when we know that Alexander did work with groups, he certainly worked with groups in the training course, and he also worked with groups much earlier on. The first group lesson was in 1895 in Melbourne, Australia, and he writes about it in his autobiography. But I think in general, he tended to work with individuals, and I don't think his orientation was towards groups the way Marge's had become.
Right. But also, I think of two things, and one is that that we're still learning how we learn, and I mean as human beings. Mm-hmm. You know, this is part of the latest research in neurobiology, how we learn. Right. And what I saw was that she was working with individuals, doing individual lessons, and sometimes it was getting in and out of a chair, sometimes it was walking, sometimes it was, what did I do once, eating an apple.
Mm-hmm. Could be anything, really.
Could be anything, but it was very much an Alexander technique individual lesson, but other people were watching. And those people were learning by what they were seeing, what they were following along with to their best ability in their experience, and they were going to get their own feedback eventually in the class when it was their turn. But also the person being worked with needed to be extremely present because they were being watched. Your behavior changes when you know you're being watched. You don't forget you're being mm-hmm. watched. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It heightens something. And it may perhaps heighten something about your ability to learn. One of my questions, and then one of the things that I feel like I experienced. Back to what I was saying at the beginning, I couldn't go into a state of pondering myself, my abilities, my self-worth, judging myself. I had to attend to this interaction with Marge, with myself, while I was being watched. Mm-hmm. The stakes were higher, and I don't know. I think it changes the experience to the point where there were times when I stopped feeling so corporal. I think the apple one was a moment when I ate the apple was a moment like this where I was eating. I was pregnant. So I needed to eat.
Right.
I was in front of the group. I was also a training to be a teacher, so I was even more probably stiffer and more self-conscious. And she really asked me to engage my thinking differently, to go back to having a less end-gaining, more process-oriented perspective with this activity. And I tasted the apple. I felt myself swallowing it, but I did not feel like I was not picturing myself in that moment. I don't know how any other way to say that. It felt like I was me, but I wasn't just a body. I don't have words for this because it's starting to sound too spiritual or something. But I think certain things dropped away that I had assumed meant me. I'll mm-hmm. put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Particularly in that world of sensation, which Alexander technique teachers ask us to drop away mm-hmm. from judging all the time based on sensation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I was sensing the apple. I was sensing taste, smell, texture. I was not those things that I just say it again. I was not the thing I thought I was.
Right, and probably you didn't do the things that you thought you needed to do to eat an apple.
Exactly.
Yeah. And she would often say, a lot of times people would, she'd work with someone and obviously have quite a profound effect on the quality of whatever they were doing. And they would say something like, this just, I don't even know what this feels like, or I have no idea what I'm doing, and I don't have words to describe it. And she'd say, well, that's just, that's just what the feeling that comes with losing some tension in your body. I mean, she would be very matter of fact about it.
Yeah, and no big deal.
No big deal. It was never a big deal, really.
Right, and that was very, very helpful.
Yeah.
It truly was. And there was also this assumption that all of us had the kinesthetic intelligence to figure this out.
That was her. That would be her assumption.
Yeah.
And I did see on one occasion, an example where someone clearly was not able to. I don't know whether it was they didn't. I think it was someone was just not able to. Let their mind rest in the present. Let's put it that way. A very intelligent person, actually a professor at the university, a music professor, who simply couldn't stay present. I mean, she would just go off topic instantly. And I saw Marge working with her over a period of a few weeks. She was kind of a regular attender at her classes and at her home. And at some point, It became clear to Marge, and I noticed it when it happened, that there was really no point in trying to make this person continue a thought. Why not just help them basically with her hands? And that'll produce some useful effects. And curiously enough, this same lady, after Marge died, became a pupil of mine. And after another year or so, she started becoming pretty good at being in the present.
Right.
And I think it just Marge knew that at that point, that there's no point in asking someone to do something or think something they're not capable of.
Right.
And Marge would. It took her a while with this lady. I mean, I remember observing this over a period of weeks, and I was wondering how Marge was going to deal with it. And at some point, yep, we're just going to. A little switch came on in her head. Okay, we're just going to work helping her move more easily, and that's enough. And she will benefit from that, and she did.
Yeah, so, and she got to the point where then she could.
Yeah, and not everybody would get to that point. And, I'm sure you saw examples where someone would bring in a severely disabled person or that kind of thing to work with. And there was no way this person was going to do any real self-directing. So Marge would just kind of help give that person an easier experience, and who knows, some of that probably would carry over time, but you wasn't going to be a classic Alexander lesson, that's for sure.
And sometimes it's something that just happens that Marge is feeling, the person is feeling, and that's as far as it needs to go into the outside world. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while there would be a kind of private moment. Mm-hmm. We can't always know what's going on in somebody.
Right.
You do your best to observe, but you can't always know.
Right, right.
And sometimes a small change is what's doable for the person. I think that's a good, that's again a word that doesn't sound maybe initially Alexandrian, because we want to undo.
Mm-hmm.
But in acting, you pick an action, you pick a goal of something you're going to try to accomplish that's doable.
Mm-hmm.
That has an end point where you know there's a response. There's a response that lets you know whether you've accomplished it or not, and I think that there's something about that with the Alexander technique that Marge was not afraid of highlighting in the experience for somebody.
That a small change might be more useful than a large change, because
right.
It could be small. Sometimes people would speak somewhat disparaging. Well, yeah, I noticed a little difference, Marge. And Marge would say, well, you know, some small change is kind of where we're going here, and the cumulative effects of small changes can be pretty powerful. And a big change, which, you know, anyone can make a thoughtless, as it were, big change in how they stand or sit, but it doesn't accomplish anything. It's just
right.
a big change, but not
necessarily. It just becomes showing off, right?
Yeah, showing off.
And I work, you know, I'm working with a woman with MS, and it's kind of that idea of one step at a time. Can you undo this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can you undo this again? Okay. Can you see that this is an actual change that you are able to create?
Right.
Let's go over that again, right?
We're not machines.
We're not perfecting people.
Not like a car where you can just pull out a spark plug and put in a new one and it's good to go. I mean, we need to integrate whatever changes are happening into a whole system, and that is not going to, very unlikely that's going to be an instantaneous process. You know, there's a story I think I mentioned in another interview with someone else, but I think it's worth repeating here. I'm guessing you weren't there for this. This, I think, was a winter workshop where some kid had wandered into class, and this was maybe his third day. And he was like 20-ish, fairly large guy. I think he might have been an athlete of some kind. And he raises his hand at the beginning of the third day of class, and he says, Marge, this is my third day here. How come I have to keep coming to get this? And, you know, of course, there were people who had been coming for years there. And, of course, when someone would ask a question like that.
It's such a good question. You sound like how 20-year-olds also like will really ask you a really good question.
Why can't I just come for a lesson and get it?
Yeah,
and,
why not?
And of course, we were all fascinated by this. How is Marge going to deal with this?
Uh-huh.
And she took a long time to answer. And you got to remember, she was a very small lady, and this guy was pretty big. And after about 20 seconds, you could just see the little gears turning in her head. What am I going to say that's going to be right for him and right for everybody else? And she looked him right in the eye and she said, I don't think your body could take it. Which was exactly both accurate and the right thing to say. And the right
Accurate,
thing to say
the
for
right
everybody.
Thing to say for everybody.
Everybody
exactly.
in the room. And
exactly.
that was one of her brilliant. She was so in the moment that, I mean, that was something where she had to think a little. But I can remember, just as an example of her in the momentness, she was working with a musician, and he had a really nice experience. And then he said something that he kind of slipped into a negative thought of some sort, a negative statement, and just instantly said, well, you better change your tune. So, yeah. Belinda, is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you think might be useful to mention before we come to an end?
Well, because, you know... Even though I'm not a young person, I was sort of the younger generation coming in there.
Yeah, you were just a kid.
Yeah, a lot of time was in the summer workshops. I also had small group classes with those of you who were studying with her,
mm-hmm.
Very, very rigorously and regularly, or were also trained teachers elsewhere,
mm-hmm.
And the excitement. The excitement that was going on in that place in those summers was really a phenomenon. It was truly incredible to see how challenged these small group leaders were to find a way to be inspired by Marge to live up to what mm-hmm. she was doing, mm-hmm. To make sense of things and then to have to express it themselves.
Right.
And yeah. so that was my mind is kind of like the final thing she did for us was to exemplify something that takes time and practice and precision, but you must do it yourself. You must articulate it, the work yourself.
Mm-hmm. And she was totally fine if you taught in a very different style than she did. She was not trying to turn out sort of cookie cutter clones of her ever. She wanted you to figure out ways of conveying the principles of the work to people, and each person would do it a little differently. And I'm sure you saw in those groups, we all taught quite differently.
Yes. Yeah. And sometimes it was more effective or less effective, but it really engendered a kind of excitement, intelligence, mm-hmm. Hard work that I think you would want to find in a group of people who are really excited by the value of the discoveries that Alexander contributed to us.
Yeah, and I always used to think that if Matthias Alexander were to stumble into one of her groups, he would think, wow, this is certainly not what I had imagined, but gosh, this is pretty good stuff. You know, he would have seen that it was someone taking his principles and applying them in a different way than he had for the most part. And he, of course, you know, we know that Alexander was very clear in his books that he felt he was just at the beginning of something and that he fully expected all sorts of developments down the road. And I think he would have looked at Marge and I'm sure quite a few other teachers today as being doing exactly what he hoped would happen.
I hope so, because certainly she was consistently coming back to the principles, saying over again she was teaching us the principles and that it was up to us to employ the principles.
There was probably no human being on the face of the planet who read Alexander's four books as consistently and over again and marked them up with little comments as she did. I mean, she was always coming back, especially to use of the self. I think that was the one. She was constantly referring to that. I believe it's the first chapter, Evolution mm-hmm. of the Technique. And she said many, many times, you should read that chapter and read it many times over. And she said the most important sentence in that whole chapter is where Alexander says, I don't have the exact words, but I tried all sorts of things, way too numerous to mention, that I'm not going to bother including here. And I think she thought that's exactly right. She was try something, experiment. That was her basic way of operating. See if it helps you. If it helps you, great. If not, then maybe you should move on.
Yeah, I'd say she said, put these principles into practice, mm-hmm. do something with them. And then the way that you're evaluating is whether you've stuck to principle or not.
Exactly.
It's just that simple. Just that simple.
Well, I think on that note, and that is a phrase she used a lot, she would say, this is too simple for you people. She did not say too easy. She was very careful about that, but definitely extremely simple. So maybe on that note, we should bring the conversation to an end. My guest today has been Belinda Mello, an Alexander teacher in New York City. And we'll put a link to Belinda's website by the interview. If you want to learn more about Marge and her teaching, you can go to a site that is all about her, MarjorieBarstow.com. We'll put a link to that also by the interview. And from that site, you can find dozens and dozens of videos of, showing Marge teaching. There's a whole new video that's just come online in the last month or so that shows her teaching in Australia in 1986. There's a lot of material out there visual and some audio interviews of the kind we're doing, some pictures. There's a lot of information about Marge available to anyone who's interested. Belinda, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Robert. It was a pleasure.